Hi, this is James White once again for the Solution Series, brought to you by Solari.com and Corey'sDigs.com. And we're going to have a wonderful show here today. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have Tom and Robin Walker with us, and I'm going to give you Tom's bio here real quick. Tom is a business executive with 20-plus years experience, leading teams, launching startups, growing various companies, and serving as a global CEO and RMO for different international companies. He grew up in a rural and very impoverished area and had to be self-sufficient at a young age, earning everything. He worked his way through school while working full-time and also for his own business while raising two kids, later owning over six businesses. Let me get here to the next page. I'd like to welcome Corey Lynn, of course, our co-host here. Corey, great to see you. Of course, I should have introduced you in the beginning. Selling and attaining personal goals of becoming a global executive and realizing it wasn't what he dreamed. After losing three mentors in 6 months, he agreed with his wife to move from their beach house with ocean views into their 20-foot travel trailer and chase life instead of money. Now, having visited 43 national parks and 34 states that started the day of the COVID pandemic, he utilized his risk mitigation skills and survival skills and became prepared for the pending collapse. Tom and Robin Walker, thanks so much for joining us here on the Solution Series.
Thank you. Thanks
Thank you for having us. It's interesting to hear that.
It is indeed.
To hear your story read back to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's start in the beginning. I mean, it's RVing. We know what this is. This is recreational vehicle. RVing stands for recreational vehicle. Yes. And what you do is you happen to have a 20-foot RV, and there's many different sizes and shapes, and we're going to get into all that. But essentially what you do is either – like you either sell your home and live in it full time, or you have a home still and you on a couple of weeks a year or a couple of months a year, you take off in it or the weekends. So let's just start with a background. How did RVing, has it been around for hundreds of years? I mean, obviously people always traveled away from their location, but doing it in style, sure. When did that come about?
It actually, yeah, it's been around for forever. In fact, if you think about it, the original covered wagons going out west were essentially RVs, right? But it wasn't for recreation then. They were doing it for homesteading and for survival. So it's been around kind of in that fashion for a long time. It really started gaining popularity as a kind of a recreation in the teens and 20s with the onset of cars. Like Ford actually built one of the first RVs with one of their campers in a Model A. So they had a little camper edition for it. And then they eventually built a back on it. And, you know, there began kind of the RVing in the United States, at least for that. And people going out west and
probably the National Park Service too, probably helped.
Yeah, when the national parks, and obviously, you know, Jim, from working in the national parks, it started in the 30s. And some of them were parks before, but not national parks. And, you know, we've been to quite a lot of them. We certainly enjoy going and wanted to see them before, you know, you're unable to. So, right. And by the way, we actually don't have the 20-foot one anymore. Now we have a giant 42-foot one.
That's just crazy. Wow. I can't even imagine hauling that. And so the reason I wanted to do this and get you guys on is because I feel like, you know, over the last couple of years, we've seen people trying to figure out where their place is, where they want to be, you know, sure. What location they want to move to, what state they want to be in. Do they want to sell their house? Do they want to go off grid, or do they want to have the RV style? And some people want to get, you know, a motorhome or a travel trailer just to have parked at their home so that they have it in case they need to leave. So absolutely. I think it's kind of a really important one, because you don't want to be in that situation where all of a sudden, you know, you're losing your house or you need to leave town and you kind of throw it together. So I thought, with all the traveling you guys have done, I know you've got some great tips for people and suggestions. And so let's just start with the RV selection, uses and needs, because it, you know, depending on your need and what you're doing, if, you know, a 20-foot might not work out. And it also depends. Do you have kids with you? Is it just one person, two people? Travel trailer versus motorhome. So I know you guys have met a lot of people along the way and probably taken a lot of that information in as well. Sure. So what do you have, think about as far as uses and needs?
So you're exactly right. And it does depend entirely on your use and need, what you're going to do with it, what your goal is, what you want to accomplish. Are you going to be using it as kind of your bug out rig where, you have your home and you have a homestead or whatever it is, and you want something that, you can hook up to, or you jump in and take off and go. Or some people have used RVing as a solution. In fact, we run into a bunch of Californians that have fled the state, and quite literally, took their kids out of school, sold their house, bought an RV, homeschooling on the road, solar, the whole thing. We've run into that. I don't know how many times we run into it. Yeah, there's a whole network of homeschoolers. In fact, we ran into a group of them once that, they were in a clamshell tent outside and they had a homeschool school going on outside of their RV. There were probably, 20 kids.
That's really cool.
That were there. Yeah. And a lot of them will travel kind of together. So their kids kind of have playmates, friends, that sort of thing. In fact, one of the coolest things that we saw when we were at Mount Rushmore, which is a very special place, but we were at Mount Rushmore, we saw parents homeschooling their kids at Mount Rushmore and giving lessons and the kids taking notes and talking with the rangers and going around to all of the different sites that were there.
Doing little book reports, like the parents were giving them the little assignments and stuff.
So what an amazing education that is, and an experience, unlike sitting in a classroom and all the things that are going on with schools these days. We thought it when we were all growing up, but now the schools have gotten horrible and, basically an indoctrination process. And a lot of parents are realizing that. And as you guys have done series on it, getting away from a government school. And this is one way that many of them do it. And it enables them to see the country while they can and to be free. Going back to what you said, you have to first establish what your goal is going to be, what you want it to be, and then what your budget is going to be. And once you kind of identify those two things, you kind of then begin a series of decisions like you've done recently, Corey, with, okay, what do I want? What do I need? And
what's the budget?
What's the budget? What am I going to end up with? So,
right.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
So we started with our little travel trailer, we started with a bucket list, and we went just 3 months straight cross country. Neither of us were working. His last company got bought and sold, and I said, nope, we're taking time off. And we did that because we had not taken more than 5 days off in 14 years. We made a bucket list of what we wanted to see, and, from the Grand Canyon to the Redwoods to the Mighty Five of Utah, and we just did it. Tom always wanted to go mountain biking in Moab, and so we just kind of made that list and marked as much as we could off, and then we torqued our axle on our little rig outside of Zion. So we limped it back home to Florida, and then we decided that I would start travel nursing because I always wanted to do travel nursing. And so we upgraded, bought the bigger fifth wheel and the bigger truck, of course, and now we are in places from 8 to 13 weeks at a time.
Wow.
And doing that really gives us an opportunity to explore and to learn about things that you wouldn't get to see if you're Corey, when you and I were talking, you mentioned that you were at the Grand Canyon for a half day, and that's what most people spend, is a day to a half day at a national park.
Right.
We were at the Grand Canyon 10 days. As I mentioned, we hiked down to the bottom. We camped overnight at the Indian Garden campground. wasn't really planned, but we did it.
And what I think is so important about this as well is a lot of people are hung up, you know, including myself through my work, with everything going on. It's so heavy. It's so negative. It's depressing and in some cases debilitating. And so I think it's important that people still live their lives and have enjoyment and explore and meet people. And so that checks off all of that on the bucket list as well, which is really important right now.
It really does. I'm glad you brought that up because it's really important. It affects us too. I mean, we hear it every day. It's sad to see the things going on with your country. I'm wearing this Glacier shirt. Glacier is one of the most woke parts in the country. You know, they had to recently take down all of their signs that said the glaciers were going to be gone by 2022. And they continue to kind of do things that way. But we wanted to go experience those parks while you still have the opportunity to do it without, you know, who knows what they'll require for you to go across state borders and that sort of thing if those things kind of happen. So we decided just to do it. And hey, if we have to go sneak into a park, we'll do that, you know, because we wanted to go see our country and live. And it's really important. We do this often, just to go outside and kind of go in. We sound like kind of tree hugger people, but we aren't really. But just going outside and being in nature is such a stress reliever.
And, absolutely.
You know, and it's important to, you know, obviously be spiritually fit, mentally fit, and physically fit, so that you can accomplish the things that you want to do in life. And that's kind of why we started going out and doing it, because, you know, I was sitting at a desk, you know, chasing a stroke and a heart attack, and she was basically tired of watching that and said, listen, I'd rather have you than ocean views. We got to do this. We got to go.
So I just got a call from legal. They said, we don't encourage anybody to sneak in the park here at,
you're funny.
If you camp there without a permit, you can get a citation. Happen to speak from experience.
You know what? I want you to go into as far as camping goes. So where the locations and where you stay. There's places where you can stay for free. There's dry, you know, dry locations, there's hookups, there's obviously campsites, national parks. But there's also websites. So let's talk about that.
So again, I think the first thing you have to do is going back to your goal after you've selected your RV. And one more thing on the RV, there's no perfect RV. You're not going to get one that you're absolutely 100% in love with, because there's going to be something about it. And we call this an 80% rig, and most of them are 60%, meaning it hits 60% of or 80% of your, you know, your bucket list items that you needed to have. So after you've done that, after you selected your RV, and you've decided you're going to do this, and you've made kind of your test runs, and you've gone to little parks and that sort of stuff. Once you've done that, then you have to decide where you're going and kind of making up your itinerary, and how you're going to go about getting there. And one of the things that we kind of found funny was that most people that do this have an actual atlas. And I don't know where it is. Oh, it's right behind me.
Very important item everyone should have right now.
Indeed.
Because Google will take you into some random places.
Yeah. And you need to be able to kind of map out where you're going to go. So most RVers have an actual atlas, and it also kind of helps document and track what you've done, and, you know, creates memories, that sort of thing. But once you've done that, then kind of map out where you want to go, what you want to do, and maybe it's not seeing the national parks. Maybe it's going to state parks, or, you know, maybe you don't want to see Idaho. Although Idaho is the most underrated state, probably.
But you definitely recommend that everything should be planned in advance, because if not, you waste time, you waste gas, you waste resources, that type of stuff, right? So it's really important to sort of have it mapped out.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Having said that, we will often, we're also very spontaneous. So one thing about RVing is, so we have everything with us. We can literally hook up to our truck, pack up everything. We can pull out of here in an hour and start heading across the country, no problem. And once you kind of meet people in RVing, they'll meet you anywhere in the country. And quite literally, hey, will you meet us in Colorado? We want to go out there for whatever, for this or for that. And go ahead.
Well, I think she was asking us about the sites.
Yeah.
And so when we were in Florida, Florida has water land management properties, districts, actually. So you can go on their website, and it's kind of like BLM land out west. You can go on their website, and you can put in for an RV spot. And these RV spots, they'll be just like a spot. There might be water hookup, but sometimes they won't even have that. So you won't have electricity. But so on our little rig, it was fine because we had solar. So we had solar, and so we could stay in these places. And so we did like a little trip through Florida, just going on these free little spots while we were waiting to go out west because it was the winter. So we were waiting for the weather to get better to go out west. So,
there are six different districts, and all of those spots were free. So it didn't cost you anything to stay at them in Florida. And this is in the spring. So,
and they'll usually have a dump station. One of them had showers.
And place for water. And you don't have to have solar. You can do it with a generator, or if most rigs will survive off their batteries for a day or two. And if you're doing it in a, cooler time of year, you don't necessarily need to have your.
And then when we were in the Grand Canyon, we stayed in the National Forest right next to the Grand Canyon, which was awesome. We got 6 inches of snow, but we stayed free next to the Grand Canyon. And we actually found it was pretty nice. We found the back road to the Grand
Canyon. Uh-oh, Lindell's calling again.
You do have to have a park pass to still go in, but you can't get around all the crowds and go on the back road.
And I've also seen there's websites, where people with land or farmers, they'll say, okay, you can come stay here. Oh, it's like an overnight thing, or maybe for a few days. And in most cases, they don't have hookups, but they have like a bathroom you can use, or maybe they've got a little farmer's market going. So you want to kind of tip them by, buying some of their goods, which you probably need on the road anyway. So
that website is Harvest Host. And Harvest Host, you actually have to have like a membership. And it's like a yearly membership. We had it.
The sites are free. They just ask you to...
Either if it's like at a vineyard, you buy a bottle of wine. If it's like a farm, you might, they might even ask you to help with chores. But we did it once, unfortunately.
Oh, we did it a few times.
We did it, yeah. But I think we only used it.
Most of the, they've since purchased another site, but it was largely out west. And now they're becoming more east. But there's also The Dirt, which is another site. And
Free Roam.
And Free Roam is really good because it lists those sites as well as you can basically put in, filter what you want. You can pull up free sites, you can pull up pay sites, state parks, whatever. And it's individuals like you and I go on and put reviews and where we stayed, that sort of thing.
One we used the most, I think, especially on our long trip, was the Campendium. Yeah.
And they have a pro version that will also allow you to do free. And people, one thing that they'll do is go out and kind of search the other sites. And also people can list, like if they have a hookup at their house, where they'll let you stay. And you'll actually run into quite a few people across the country that will do that, which kind of really surprised us. But I mean, we were in Yosemite and we met this fantastic couple there, and they invited us to actually go hook up at their house and stay at their house for a week.
Because
they had a hookup there, and we've run into that several times, where people have offered to you know, to just let us go stay. So if
you have to, like, if you, like, a certain size boat, you have to have a captain's license if you drive a boat over a certain size. You see some of those really giant RVs, those huge ones. I can't even imagine what it'd be like to drive one of those. Do you have to have special, like, permitting or licensing or anything, no matter how long or how big it is? Is it the same in every state?
So if it's over 65 feet, some states will require you to get a different license. Like, if it, but that's huge. So
ours are we talking specifically travel trailers though, or motor? Because isn't it different with motorhomes?
Nope.
Oh, it's not? Really?
Nope.
Okay.
No. Any Joe Schmo can get behind one.
Yeah. Wow.
You can go today. In fact, if you go to an RV dealership today and pull up there, they will give you a brief rundown and take you out for a test drive.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That, the so first the time I ever drove a motorhome, I went to look at one. I'd never driven one or anything, and we saw one that we really loved. And we went down, we actually had a purchase agreement on it, but there was something wrong with it. Anyway, but it was a 45-foot Class A motorhome, and he took me out for a test drive and basically taught me how to drive it while we were on the test drive. So,
wow. You know what I want to get into? Let's talk about, like, technical tips, you know, like with batteries and solar. And I know you're doing something pretty fancy there with hydroponics, kind of crazy. But just, you know, what do people need to prepare? I mean, like, I look at it and go, I don't know if I'm ever going to use the solar or have the ability to, but I think I want it. I want it just to have it as backup. And the batteries, it gets confusing and it gets expensive. I started looking into that. Yes. I mean, I don't even have a travel trailer yet, but I was looking into the batteries, and it's like, well, you got to figure out how many days it's going to buy you time. And so it gets a little complicated.
It really does. And so let's start first there with solar. So solar, we actually ran into a couple. They have a really popular YouTube channel where they did, and they traveled the country extensively. But we ran into them when we were in St. Augustine. We had our little travel trailer, and we were actually looking at these big Class A RVs and talking about buying one of those. And they said, listen, keep your little one first. Go do the things that you want to do, because you can put that anywhere. If it's 20 feet, by the way, that is kind of a magic number, because 20 feet or 22 feet maximum will get you into most national parks. You can go into a national park with it. If your rig's bigger than that, many national parks won't let you in.
You can get in, but you might not be able to stay, like, in the national park, like camp actually in the national park.
Yeah. Some of them do, like Grand Teton had a spot for our rig, which is 42 feet. But at the Grand Canyon, you have to be 22 feet or less.
I thought it was 32.
Well, they have a side. They have one side where there are larger sides. Anyway, they actually gave us some advice and said, listen, keep your small one because you're going to upgrade at some point, get a bigger one. But when you do, you're going to miss having a little one. And you'll be able to take the little one anywhere. And they also said, we were like, well, we're thinking about putting more solar on it so we can run our air conditioner, so we can do all of that stuff. And they said, don't. They had 700 watts of solar on theirs. They could run their air conditioner for several hours, but it would completely, and they had lithium battle-borne batteries, which are the, you know, high-end expensive batteries. And they actually, it was a sponsorship for them. And they said, don't chase solar. Get enough solar that you can, you know, run your 12-volt system. RVs have at least two different systems. They have a 12-volt and 120 or a 240-volt system. So your 12-volt is usually what you run on for the lights that are on in here now, they're on a 12-volt system. So they're actually running off of the battery, and the shore power plugs in and feeds that. So they said, don't chase it. Have enough solar that you can stay off and buy a small generator. And that's what you need to do. Going back to the batteries and the cost, the battle-borne batteries, that can be $1,000 for a 12-volt, 100-amp-hour battery. And while that's very nice to have and it lasts a lot longer and gives you more power, you don't have to have that. You can have an inexpensive, just regular car battery, but it's not going to give you as much power and off time. So those are things that you have to take into consideration. And again, what you want to do and what your goal is. Some people are completely solar set up where they have 1500 watts. They have a whole bank of, but that's hugely expensive. You're talking about, if you've got that much solar and that amount of batteries, you're talking about maybe $50,000 in batteries, solar, and solar controllers and chargers. So just that equipment is going to cost you $50,000 or $60,000 if you have that much of it, so that you can run your air conditioner, you can run, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to spend that much money.
I mean, you can follow the weather too to kind of, you know, we try to get a stay out of the heat so we can.
Yeah. Most of our viewers are following the weather. You know, somehow we became snowbirds, I guess, or reverse. But we definitely chase the 70s.
Yeah. Now, what other items do you recommend that are obviously you want to have some tools? I know when I was talking with you on the phone, someone came over and asked if they could borrow one of your ladders.
Yeah.
Which is really, that's a whole other aspect we'll talk about too, is the networking part of it. But
sure.
So like ham radios or internet or just like what types of, you know, ammo, guns, all that good stuff. Do you want to make sure, you know, you have with you definitely tools, but go ahead.
So for tools, I just wrote down, make sure that you have a wrench socket for every bolt that's on your rig, every size. So, because if you don't, if you have a flat tire or if you, you know, you want to be able to handle stuff by yourself as much as you can. There are services that you can call, like we have roadside assistance on this rig, but you're going to be sitting there for half a day at least to do that for a flat tire when you could. I mean, this thing will jack itself up. And you just change the tire, put the other tire on, and you're on your way. But you have to have a wrench to be able to take the lug nuts off. So make sure that you have those wrenches, that you have bits for the screws in your rig, because they're different than the screws in your house. So you have to make sure you've got that. And make sure you have some small electrical tools, like a meter or a tester, and you know at least how to do some minor stuff like that. And it's really not very difficult to do once you kind of get into it. It's really kind of simple stuff, and everybody, that's what you were kind of referring to, Corey, everybody will help you. Everybody will offer help.
And just also have the mindset that things are going to break, because you're taking your home and you're going 65 to 70 miles per hour down the road. And roads are not great. So, I mean, we learned that in South Dakota. We lost a bedroom window. So it just flew out.
Wow.
So stuff is going to break. And you kind of have to be like in the mindset, okay, we're just going to fix it. Like you said, solutions. So we had to go stop at a hardware store and get a piece of plexiglass. And Tom had to tape it up. And it stayed that way for about a couple months before we could get it replaced.
It didn't leak over 20,000 miles.
Yeah. I mean, and we were going cross country and we were going through to Yellowstone. That was our Yellowstone trip. And so we had to, like, you know, luckily it did great and didn't leak, but things are going to break. And you kind of, when we stop and we go, we'll check, you know, Tom will do a walk around and check the rig and stuff like that. You know, it's, you know, you walk inside and you're like, oh no, the refrigerator opened and stuff's on the ground. And so you kind of have to have, it's going to happen. It's fine. You just, you know.
Be prepared for it.
So like magnets, bungee cords, and duct tape come to mind.
You need magnets, you need bungee cords, you need duct tape. Those are essential. You need a cordless drill with a bit that'll, you know, fit your stuff. Make sure you have a few of those. Make sure you have a drill bit.
Backup batteries.
Exactly.
I mean, and when you're when we were traveling on several days, if we're going to a next assignment, you know, we have to have everything packed up so we don't we don't take, you know, like when we're sitting for a while, we're at a, you know, few weeks, you know, we take out the glassware and stuff like that. Right. But when you're, when we're traveling to the next spot, we don't, you know, everything gets packed away. Everything, you know, is either in the sink, you know, so it doesn't get broke on the road.
Yeah, like right now our wine glasses are hanging in racks and stuff on it. And we take all of that, pack it away.
You know, speaking of that, how does that work as far as like, I think firearms was mentioned in here, like different states have different regulations as far as firearms are concerned, and certainly you can't drink and drive anywhere, but isn't a motorhome, isn't that considered your home? Does that fall under a different set of rules and guidelines? I know you can't drink while you're driving, but what if you're in the back seat? If you're in the back there, are you allowed to have open alcohol if you're in the back of the RV?
If you're in the motorhome, sure. You could actually go back there. But that's, again, that's going to depend on the state.
Okay.
And it's also going to depend on the officer that stops you. And going back to the gun laws, I'm going to say the same thing there. In fact, I questioned it a lot. And one of my good friends, he was EOD in the military, and I talked with him about it. He's been all over the country as well. They're also RVers. And he said to me, just go. You've got the Second Amendment that constitutionally protects you. And if you have to protect yourself somewhere and you don't have a firearm, would you rather be in court defending yourself or buried? So that's kind of the way a lot of people view it. And a lot of people, but you know, that's a decision you have to take, because the legal way to do it is by most states, although some are doing constitutional carry and some of them will allow you. But if you take long guns specifically across state lines, you have to have written permission from the state in order to do that. So if you get written permission, you basically just told the state that you're coming in with firearms. You can do it. You can travel with it. Most RVers do. Most RVers are just have their guns in their RVs.
Now you did something kind of unique with hydroponics.
Yes. We actually have a hydroponic garden growing in our basement. So far,
basement.
Yeah,
kills me.
Yeah. Well, this rig is very unique in that it has it actually has the most storage that you can get in an RV, other than like a toy hauler. A toy hauler is an RV that you can put side by sides or four wheelers, motorcycles, that sort of thing in. When you do that, it has a garage, so you lose a lot of living space. The biggest ones are like 16 feet, that sort of stuff. Usually in that garage, it's like a garage. It has a floor that's kind of like a rubber mat. They have a loading ramp, and they usually have some sort of a bunk bed system, and they'll have a separate little bathroom, kind of like what you might have in your garage at home. But you really give up a lot in living space in order to do that. So this is very similar to a toy hauler, except all the storage is underneath it.
How do you have hydroponics set up? I mean, and what do you do then when you're now loading up to travel with all of that?
So first, we ordered just a small little hydroponic garden.
Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's just got a little light that goes over it.
But you don't have to do that at all. We just wanted to do it to see if we could do it and if it would travel and if it was going to be a mess everywhere and if we could actually grow it and sustain it and do that sort of thing. So it started as that.
Now it's just a killer tomato plant.
Giant tomato plant that it produces.
So that is so cool. You're growing tomatoes while you're traveling across the country.
We are growing hydroponic tomatoes. In fact, I took a cutting of it and gave it to my mom, and she now has part of my killer tomato plant. I say that because it grew so big, so it's taken up one of my entire bays. And it grew so big down there that it started killing out the other plants. So I was growing.
We did have bib lettuce. We had
romaine lettuce.
Romaine lettuce.
I was growing celery. Like 6 heads of romaine lettuce, and those were kind of continually producing for us. And, you know, we really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, we made a lot of salads from
it. Yeah, we had like 10 salads that we grew off of that. But it got killed out by the tomato plant. It got so big that it killed those out. It killed we had bell peppers growing. It killed the bell peppers. And it just has like little cherry tomatoes on it, but it's given us maybe 40.
Are they in like fully enclosed containers so that when you're traveling, there's not the like water slushing all over or?
No. So what I do when we're traveling, it's in a container that's covered. So it doesn't splash out all over the place, but it does splash a little bit. And what I do is put like I just take a big trash bag and put up under where the hydroponic pods are. And when we're going down the road, it'll spill a little bit, but they really don't move much. And in fact, they're in the same spot when we get where we're going. It's amazing to me how stable everything is up underneath. When we first got it, I strapped down everything down there because I was so nervous that everything was going to be sliding back and forth and going all over the place. So I spent like 2 hours strapping everything down with ratchet straps and all of that stuff, and nothing moved. And the next time I did, I did that a couple of times, and then we did it, and my buddy said, you know, you don't have to strap all that down. You know, it's going to stay there. It's not going to move all over. And it does. For the most part, it doesn't really move a lot. So
that's awesome. Now, you had told me, like, as far as ham radios, internet, cell phone, you had told me something interesting I wasn't aware of with, like, national parks and cell phone usage and that type of thing.
Well, we were in the Grand Tetons, and we had no service at all the whole time. And then there was a lady walking by our rig and was asking us about it, and we started talking to her, and she actually got a phone call. And we were like, how do you have cell service? And she's like, I'm with AT&T. So apparently AT&T had bought up, I guess, all the towers in the national parks or something.
So they have their first responder network, and it's the only network that's inside of the national parks, and it's AT&T's towers. And as you guys know, there's only really three companies that have towers inside of the United States, and AT&T is the only one that has towers inside of national parks, unless it's a national park. Like we were recently at Cumberland Island National Seashore, which is a national park, and they have service there because they're so close to mainland. And Dry Tortugas is kind of the same way. But most national parks are out in the middle of nowhere, and the only service is going to be with AT&T. So it's kind of a better love-hate thing that we have with AT&T because they give us unlimited data because of Robin being a nurse, we're on the first responder network, and our data doesn't get clocked. So they don't slow us down. They don't kick us off. Stays at a constant speed, and we have true unlimited data. Really, the only other option for that is Starlink. Outside of that, Starlink is pretty expensive though. It's $150 a month, and then you could do whatever cell service that you want to do, or use Starlink for wireless calling, that sort of thing. We do have a wireless router on our rig, and it amplifies the signal and boosts it. So the signal goes through our RV and the height of the RV, and it sits on top of the RV and boosts the signal from there.
You guys have like the little, you know, the small little like Motorola radios that can go up to a mile that you guys kind of take with you when you're out hiking? Or
we do. Use ham radios for that, and as you know, you can use, I know you guys did a series on that as well. You can use ham radios for like up to a mile, and they're really good in the mountains, that sort of stuff, but if your wife has hers turned on.
Robin,
I'd be guilty of that.
That's good.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, a lot of the places that you stop at, I know, you know, as far as getting supplied, Here in Montana, I know there's a lot of these, of course, because of the park, there's a lot of these places you could pull in. A lot of them have little convenience stores and grocery stores and stuff like that. Is that pretty consistent across the country? Do you usually supply up, or is there places that you go? And I know there's a question on here about storage facilities. Do you have storage facilities strategically placed across the country where you may leave certain things in, where you know you're going to be back and you need to grab it, that type of thing?
So, We actually have a storage unit in Florida for our home base. And then we have kind of a SH, you know, the hitting the fan. when things hit the fan, we have places that we will go. We have like three or four of those set out. And then we have a group of people that we'll meet there in those scenarios. I mean, that could be anything from a hurricane. Like we were in St. Augustine last year, or in September, when Hurricane Ian hit. And we had to decide whether or not we were going to stay or go. And because we have a generator and we're fully self-sufficient, we're like, well, and this rig will sustain about 100-mile-per-hour wind. Without being, and we had like 80 mile per hour gust while we were there. We stayed in our RV. Don't necessarily recommend that you do that.
No kidding.
Makes for an exciting.
It's an exciting night.
Well, it stayed as a stronger hurricane longer than anybody anticipated. I know you guys have done some stuff on weather too, and one of the things that I did in business was modeled hurricanes, and I've never seen a hurricane that late that came in the season and stayed that strong over land. There's never been one that's done that before. And the temperatures just shouldn't have supported a hurricane being that strong coming on. Anyway, we decided to stay, we stayed, and we were fine.
So now, with the locations that you have that you can go to, are these all mostly people that you've met along the way on your travels?
So there's actually one that's an actual park in North Georgia that is pretty much, it's a self-sufficient park. It's in the middle of a national forest. It's a
beautiful park.
It has its own water and has a farm and,
it's 200-foot waterfalls. It's
four of them. Yeah.
They have access to the Appalachian Trail.
And it's a bunch of people like us. And she said, hey, bring some Patriots with you when you come. and so that's one of the places that we would go. And another is my cousin. His wife has a farm in South Georgia. Yeah. In South Georgia, and we have a couple of other places that are kind of dispersed where we would go in the event that we needed to do that. But with an RV, you don't really have to have stuff put places because you have your stuff with you. And as far as James, you asked about supplies, so we have. Right behind us, we have a 27 cubic foot refrigerator that's bigger than the one we had in our beach house behind us. And we also have a fridge freezer in our basement. And we have a bunch of dry goods and that sort of stuff as you would have in our basement. So we have supplies like that. And then we stop off at the big box stores. Actually, we were looking on your side at the resources, and we may do some of that, but we also try to wherever we are, we try to frequent the local farmers, the farmers markets, especially if there are ranches, that sort of thing. Like when we were in Idaho, we met a farmer in Oregon. He was in East Oregon, right on the border, the part that's trying to join.
They're looking to merge together, aren't they? That's good. I hope they do.
Exactly. So he's one of those guys. And we bought a bunch of beef from him while we were out there. And In fact, when we first met him, he was there and he had like 4 or 5 of his kids with him and his wife was back home. But he was selling us, I forget what type of cow.
He sold us some fillets. But he just said, well, before I sell it to you, how are you going to cook it?
I have to know how you're going to cook it before I sell it to you, because if you're going to cook it well done, I'm saving it for somebody else.
That's funny.
That's right.
Yeah. So we try to do stuff like that wherever we go. And as you mentioned, Jim, there are resources like that kind of wherever you go. But saying that, we really don't go to the big cities. We avoid the big cities largely because of any number of things. But, you know, most of the big cities aren't the places that we want to see or where we want to go.
Well, and it's also cool with the travels that you're doing all across the country, just familiarizing yourself, you know, for people who maybe haven't done a lot of traveling, familiarizing yourself with the roads, with the backcountry roads, with, you know, the different areas and the people in those areas. And I know one of the things you said is, you know, it's something where even if a person was, say, you know, they converted their van or something there, and it's just one person going solo, they're never going to be lonely because the people you meet are so fantastic. So tell us a little just about the networking and the people, and it feels so like its own kind of community, like a traveling community, you know?
Yeah, it really is. You want to talk to that a little bit?
We've made tons of friends, and really
all over the country.
All over the country. And actually, we kind of had a weird start of it, because when we decided to move into our camper and put everything in storage,
which we'd been planning for months,
it was April 1st of 2020. So we found a park.
The day the country shut.
Yeah, we found a little RV park that was very nice, and it was in St. Augustine. So, we were both still working, you know, I was commuting to Jacksonville to my job, and he was starting to work from home. And then, of course, they shut down the country. And they shut down the country. So we were stuck at this little RV park, and we ended up making some really amazing friends and people that actually inspired us, our friends Joe and Sandy. They had done the country 4 times.
They're friends that'll drive across the country to meet you.
Yeah, they inspired us to do this and go full time. And, you know, so that's, and then just people we've met on the road. We met several female solos. Like one was converted her little minivan, had her ex-husband help her, convert her little minivan. And she was going cross country solo with her dog. In fact, a lot of female travelers will usually see us as a couple and will park closer to us just because they know we're a couple, and they're like, okay, they feel a little safer, you know, being close, you know.
We ran into that a bunch.
And we knew one girl that she went through Canada in a tent.
She's met us several places across the country. And she had it, she traveled. She did it before the whole COVID, the pandemic thing. But before all of this transpired, she did that. And she went all through Canada, down into Mexico, everywhere. And she had a tent. And she did it out of a Honda Accord. And so you can absolutely do it without spending a ton of money. And, you know, and she's another person that would, like, we met her most recently and while we were in Glacier last summer. And she said, hey, guys, I'm actually coming through there. I'd like to, you know, get together again. Are you going to be? We're like, yeah, come on.
Because, and we started our Instagram, Sideways Adventures. We started that just so our kids, because all our kids are grown, but just so they could keep track of us, where we were, and kind of see where we're doing. And they think it's awesome. They in fact, our youngest son, he lives in California, but when we were in Idaho, he flew out and hung out with us for the weekend. So they think it's amazing. We went whitewater rafting in Idaho. And so it's just, but there are other RVers. Seasoned RVers. They have groups and they meet up in the group, and they're called escapees, and they have a lot of.
And a lot of those folks travel with their kids. And we've met a ton of those. We met a couple in Idaho that were, they were fleeing California, sold their house, bought a big toy hauler, fifth wheel. In fact, he was having some issues with his solar and asked me if I could help him out and help him track it down because he was brand new to it and didn't know how to use his solar controller and that sort of stuff. So I went over, kind of helped him figure out how to work his solar controller because they're all pretty similar. And like I said, everybody is willing to help you. And we walk around every evening and we'll have a cocktail or something and walk around the park. And when we do, we ran into usual, like in here, there were maybe, what, 10 travel nurses? There's like 10 travel nurses in this park where we are now.
Wow.
And they're all in RVs.
Well, that's one of the questions I had is wondering of the people you meet, like what types of different work do they do for, especially the ones traveling with children, you know, they're probably not retired yet. So like what type of different work, how are people making a living while doing this full time?
Sure. Lots of different ways. We met one couple, actually the day we got this rig, when we traded our little one in and bought this thing, we were going back to, and we saw this couple from California. And we're like, oh, California, it's okay. And they had this little Class B plus. It's like a little a van that has like a bigger body on it and a one slide out. And there were two kids, two dogs, two parents in that little Class B. And we would see them out. And they'd been there for a little while. And when we came over, we were out one morning and they said, hey, we saw you guys got a new RV and our daughter really likes them. Do you mind if she takes a look at it? And we're like, no, absolutely not. Bring your daughter over there. Said, well, we started to bring you some wine the other night because she was so excited about your RV. She wanted to see it. So they came in, we showed them, and then they told us their story. The daughter had been in school. They were in California, in Southern California. And the day that they went back to school, they had them in these shields, plexiglass shields
around
their desk. They were separated.
And they had to wear
a mask and a face shield inside of their plexiglass shields. And then they started talking about critical race theory in the class and teaching them why they were racist because they were born white. And that was her first day back at school after all this stuff. And she's like, this is insane.
Because, she's only 12.
Yeah. And she said, I know that I'm not racist. I know that, you know, my parents and what. So she, at the end of the day, that was her first day back. This girl's 12. She packs up her stuff. She's leaving school. And they said, you don't have to take your stuff. You're coming back tomorrow. And she said, no, I'm not coming back tomorrow.
She went home and told her, you're going to homeschool me.
And the parents took their other kid out of school, a younger boy, sold their house, bought that little Class B RV.
And they had their own company.
They had their own business. They sold t-shirts and stuff. They had a t-shirt company. And they hit the road with their business, started doing their business on the road, and were in Florida where we met them because of freedom. And that's why they were on the road homeschooling and doing this. And we've met so many people that are like that.
And, you know, too, with our Instagram, it's helped us keep in touch with people because, you know, we'll tell them. And, you know, we've made very good friends. I mean, when we were in South Dakota and I was on my first assignment, made some really great friends from the park there. And I still talk to them, you know, message them via, you know, either Facebook or, you know, Instagram.
Yeah, in fact, we learned something from him while we were there. He was an old trucker, retired trucker. And his truck went missing for several days when we were parked next to him. And he said, hey, if you don't have a lock on your fuel tank, on your truck, you need to go get one. Because some environmentalists poured water down the diesel tank on my truck and basically blew up his engine.
Wow.
Yeah, and just because he was driving a diesel truck. So
I wonder how many people travel and then go to farms or just look online for like local gigs, you know, where they can kind of earn some money when they're hopping from location to location.
There is a site, it's called Work Camp, and it's
Work Campers and Work Up.
Yeah, and it's spelled WORKAMP. And you can go on there. I think it used to be free, but I went on there today, and I guess you have to pay to part of it. But anyway, they have tons of things listed where you, like, a lot of times there will be a couple that might want to be a work campers and go work for these RV places, you know. Yeah. And the husband will be doing, like, groundskeep, and the wife will work in the office or something. So they have a lot of that type stuff. But also we have another young couple that they were full timers, and she was like a personal assistant, you know, but she did everything from her RV. So it was all, you know, she just coordinated it with.
And he worked in marketing for a bicycle company. But many sites like here, there's several people here that work for the campground
and get a discount.
Sometimes they'll get their site at no cost, or they'll get paid, you know, it depends on where you are and kind of how that goes. But there are lots of different jobs that you can do while you're at. In fact, I was a contractor before that was my first business, was a construction company. But while I was here, someone asked if I wanted to go and do construction work, and I said no.
Well, Tom and Robin, we're just coming towards the end of the podcast here.
Sure.
It's great having you guys on. Can you give us email addresses, but websites? Or I know you have a YouTube channel. Can you let people know where to go find out more about you and maybe follow your travels?
Sure.
If you want to. You don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to.
No, we would love for people to visit us. It's on the best sites are Instagram and YouTube, and
that's Sideways Adventures
on both. And that actually started because that little rig that we had, the first site that we were on was for that big rig that we had, or that we had a purchase agreement on that we didn't buy. So we had this huge site, we had this little bitty RV on it, and we pulled up there and we're like, well, we can't see them. We were on them on a marsh site, looking out of the marsh, and we're like, well, we can't see the marsh. Why don't we turn it so we're facing the RV's facing marsh? So we turned the RV sideways with it had a little wheel on the front. So we grabbed the wheel, pulled the little trailer around, turned it sideways facing the marsh, and people were coming by like, how did you turn your RV sideways? So they started calling us the Sideways a couple. While we were there.
And that's how they got the name.
And that's how we got the name.
Thank you so much for sharing all this information. And I hopefully will see you guys on the road one day.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, if you come through Montana, if you come to Glacier Park again, drop me a line. Yeah. We'll go out and grab a burger or something.
Definitely.
Great having you both on here. RVing. RVing, folks, is it's a great thing if you want to get a chance to see the countryside and, you know, it's a little bit of freedom, certainly, and breaking the monotony of every day. And we appreciate Tom and Robin Walker being here today telling us about that. If you want to follow the Solution Series, you can go to coreysdigs.com or solari.com and just click on the link there, and you can find all the great guests that we've had previously. Thanks again, both of you, for being here today. We appreciate it. And I want to thank my co-host, Corey Lynn, as always. Corey, always great to be here with you. Until next time, this is James White for the Solution Series, saying bye now.